Thanks for listening, Unplugged Army. I'm Louis Unga, General Manager at Whirlwind Golf Club at Wild Horse Pass. We're proud to present Doug Fron's Unplugged.
Thank you, sweet Lou. I am almost ready to play Whirlwind Golf Club at Wild Horse Pass. Let me remind all of the Unplugged Army one more time that I did break 100 at Wailea Golf Club. Yes, I did. And I beat my daughter, McKenna. That was the most important thing. Yes. As she sits behind me, the intern, with a sly intern smile, knowing that she was the loser multiple times, both in the games of Hawaiian bowling that we played that prepared us to be warriors going out on a hunt in which we bowled like a frisbee disc inside kind of an open horseshoe. We did that a couple times, both at the Polynesian Cultural Center on Oahu, and then we also did it at Old Lahaina Luau, which was a fantastic cultural experience. So we had a great time in Hawaii. As you can hear, the airport signal behind me. Now, the one thing that I don't understand, and I appeal to all husbands, even though I'm allegedly the commander-in-chief, I am not the commander-in-chief of the Fron's household. And I would like to know at what point in my life I am actually going to realize that I do not have decision-making power within 20 miles of an airport. I've come, there's a radius of where you get to make decisions as a husband. And I have learned that if you are within 20 miles of an airport, then your decision-making power has been completely and utterly lost. So to let you know my trip home from vacation, the flight left at 11:18. We got up at 6:15 for the 11:18 boarding time, 6:15. We left at 7:35 in the morning for the 11:15 boarding time. We then arrived at Costco to fill up the rental car at about 7:55. And then we got through security at the airport at 8:30 for our 11:15 boarding flight. So with that, we had about 3 hours or so to, I guess, rest up, get prepared for the flight to Oahu, which is the island where Honolulu is. There are a few flights to the mainland from the different islands, but we were not, for some reason, able to secure one of those. I never did figure out why that was, but my parents were so nice to pay for this entire trip. I think a lot of you know, after getting fired, I'm not in the tax bracket to be able to take my family to Hawaii, so it was just a wonderful trip. Just so appreciative that my parents did this. However, what was strange about it was that, however, the person that my mother hired to be the travel agent to plan out the trip for 10 people, I guess he wasn't prepared enough to understand that you can fly from Maui to Phoenix. So we are flying from Maui to Oahu to Phoenix. So this is all of the story of getting to the Maui airport. Then when we finally got, or I shouldn't say finally, when we got here, you know, into our kind of resting area gate seats 3 hours ahead of time, we then sat there and they made an announcement that said, if you'd like to go to Honolulu sooner, please report to gate 19. And I walked over there and they said, oh, we have seats available on this flight to Honolulu. And I said, well, do you have room for four, a party of four? And she said, yes, sure. We have plenty of room, please. So I walked over and I asked the family, hey, do you guys just want to go to Honolulu now? And they all said, oh, yeah, whatever. Yeah, sure. And I said, okay, let's go. So then I went over to stand in line to get our tickets transferred to the flight that left 3 hours before the flight that we were scheduled to take. And I realized none of the family had followed me. So I went back and I said, are we still okay to go? And they go, oh, yeah, yeah. And I said, I'm so sorry. I was confusing in my direction of let's go. Let's go means get up now. And then all of a sudden there's panic in the family. So they had 2 minutes where they didn't have to panic, but then panicked once I said, let's go a second time. So I learned that that in the midst of a situation, let's go does not necessarily mean let's go, part of my non-decision-making abilities. Then, as I'm standing in line and the family is now behind me, the actual decision maker of the family comes up and says, wait a minute, we're going to be ahead of our bag. And I said, okay, so what? We're not changing our flight to Phoenix. We would be changing our flight to Oahu. So we will get there now. And she said, so we're just going to go there and sit for 4 hours? And that was a confusing statement because it's perfectly okay to be 3 hours early to a flight, but it's not okay to be 4 hours early to a flight. My opinion was very simple. If a flight is leaving that gets you to a destination that you're headed and you can get on it, because who knows what's going to happen to your flight. There's always a delay. There's always a mistake. And can you imagine if the flight that we were regularly scheduled to take from Maui to Oahu got delayed and we missed the flight from Oahu to Phoenix, but we could have been on the earlier flight just to make sure you're there. And there's also another secret that I think is really important. If you're already at the airport painfully early, well, then that could be more time at the bar. So my official theory is you get there with your podcast equipment, you set it up at the bar. The bar at the Oahu airport has this amazing, in the Hawaiian Airlines section, has this amazing beer called Kona Brewing Fire Rock Ale. And so I would be sitting there with a Kona Fire Rock Ale while podcasting with you on a what would be a Beer Wednesday, because, you know, I am on vacation. And instead, I had to podcast on a shelf, basically overlooking the sun. But it is, you know, as you can guess, as the husband, it is totally my fault. I don't know why I ever thought of going up to the gate early when we had the opportunity, and why not take advantage of being here 3 hours early when there's a flight that leaves 3 hours early and they're asking, would you like to get on it? But again, you're within 20 miles of an airport, you're a husband, make no decisions, just follow directions, and then everybody's happy. And I seem to do that a lot in my life. I don't think I would be fired, to be quite honest, if I didn't make my own decisions. I think that's a negative of my opinion. I should just be a follower, not be a leader, not make decisions that are quick, that I think have been well thought out. You should always make decisions as a long committee. And so I failed. So that was my story of the trip home. But hey, you know, we're here. And then coming up almost immediately, as I, you know, right after I land, take a quick nap, and then we're intern McKenna and I are going over for an interview with Ron Schertz, which I'm excited about. He's the owner of the Arizona Rattlers, doesn't do a lot of interviews, and I'm really interested in his opinion on how the arena should have handled things, because the arena is booking concerts and leaving Monday nights for the Rattlers to play playoff games, not really caring what the Rattlers think. And I've always wondered, is that ever going to push the Rattlers out to Glendale? Is that going to push the Rattlers to another arena? Or are they going to stay downtown and basically allow themselves every year to be continually taken advantage of? Now, in defense, I understand the arena is probably saying, listen, we have a choice, book Madonna or book a Rattlers game. And I think all of us know enough about arena management, even if you know nothing, and which I don't. I don't know anything about arena management, but I think it would be a simple decision that, yeah, I'm going to choose Madonna. But if it's every year for 15 years that you've been doing this and never giving the team a Friday or a Saturday night, well, that's kind of different. At some point, you would say, you know what? Let me go somewhere where I'm a little more appreciated. And I would assume that's the case in Glendale, because what else are they doing? You know, they got basically nothing going on out there. All right, coming up next, let's talk All-Star Game. Pretty jacked up about what I saw Tuesday night. It's coming up on Doug Franz Unplugged, presented by Whirlwind Golf Club at Wild Horse Pass. I can't believe this, Unplugged Army. The benefit that we have, the Whirlwind Golf Club at Wild Horse Pass is the presenting sponsor.
Look what we get for the 2023 summer package, okay? For a little less than $1,000, you get 25 rounds of golf between now and Labor Day. So that equals out to about $36 a round, and you're playing a course that's normally $200 a round in the spring and $100 a round in the summer. Now, I don't want to sound like one of those cheesy commercials where they go, but that's not all. But listen to how the price continues to drop on the round of golf when you also get a Titleist SM9 wedge. Yes, you're actually getting a golf club. You get two dozen Pro V1s. That retails for a little over $100. And you get two bottles of Pharmagel sunscreen and three Whirlwind hats. All of that lowers your golf price to about $25 a round to play Whirlwind. Go to whirlwindgolf.com and feel the wind.
I'm Janelle, general manager of Bell's Nashville Kitchen, aka the Whiskey Wizard. Bell's isn't your typical country bar with mediocre bar food. We are a scratch kitchen with chef-inspired dishes, and the only place you can get the best sandwich in all of Arizona, our Nashville Hot Chicken Sandwich. Now, the drinks. I spend days infusing our own whiskey creations. Come in for Whiskey Wednesdays to learn about and drink our famous whiskey selection. We have live music most days and all weekend as part of our honky-tonk brunch.
Bell's Nashville Kitchen on Main Street in Old Town Scottsdale. You found home, down home.
Okay, first of all, All-Star Game. How cool was it to actually feel like we're a real-life Major League Baseball team? I mean, every team, it's forcible entry. Every team has to be represented in the All-Star Game. So every year you only get one player in the All-Star Game. That normally means you stink. Now, maybe, you know, if that one person is Paul Goldschmidt in some of the years of the Diamondbacks, that was different because he was clearly an All-Star. But most of the time that that happens, it's a situation where there's somebody better than you, but their team's already been represented, so we need to find somebody to put it from your team. And since you're the best player on your team, you get that position, and therefore it kicks out somebody that should have been invited. Plus, over the years, Major League Baseball keeps expanding the roster, so more and more players make the roster, which in my opinion is more and more annoying. But with the Diamondbacks actually getting four players, it felt like we're a real-life National League team. Zach Gallen pitches the first inning, gets the starting nod. That's cool, so people talk about him. And then he doesn't go 1-2-3, but with a caught stealing, he doesn't give up a run. So there we go. Attention for Zach Gallen. And then, of course, Corbin Carroll getting mic'd up. Corbin Carroll's a great kid. Very, very boring dude, which kind of stinks from a marketing standpoint, but a good guy, and that's important. The two things that really bothered me, number one, about last night, about the All-Star game. Number one, I don't understand the marketing ignorance of those American League and National League jerseys at all. Now, for sales concerns, a lot of people think it makes a lot more sense. It's another jersey to buy. So, therefore, you want a Zach Gallen National League jersey, you're going to go buy that jersey. And the best way to market the Zach Gallen jersey would be to be able to market that one. Okay. If we've established that's what you want, why not have a limited edition Diamondbacks jersey? A specific Diamondbacks All-Star jersey that's just for the Diamondbacks. Doesn't that make a lot more sense? Because I want my guy to stand out. Those of us that grew up loving the All-Star game, all we've ever seen is our team's jersey out there. It's not like hockey where you need to know whose, you know, team is who. You can't have out there all these multiple colored jerseys because then it would get confusing who you're passing to. And it's not football when you have the same effect, or basketball. Okay, I understand you need to wear the same jersey. What makes baseball better than all the other ones is that you can wear your actual jersey. And yet baseball's not smart enough to realize that anymore. They think, you know what, better for jersey sales to be able to do it this way so we can sell a Zach Gallen All-Star National jersey. I don't want that. I don't want a National League Zach Gallen jersey. I'm a Diamondbacks fan. Yes, I love Zach Gallen. I think he's a great pitcher. And of course, I'm a Zach Gallen fan for now, but I'm a bigger D-backs fan than I am a fan of an individual. I want a Diamondbacks jersey. Now, if you give me the best of both worlds where you create a road jersey and you have a little bit of a parameter that maybe there's got to be a streak of a Seattle color in it, even though we all hate Seattle, but if there's a streak of the Seattle Mariners colors, and you just simply say, like, the D-backs logo has to be trimmed in the All-Star Game colors for that year or something like that. Now this is really cool. I see the Diamondbacks logo. It's a pure Diamondbacks jersey, and I can go buy a Perdomo All-Star jersey, a Zach Gallen All-Star jersey, but it still feels like a Diamondbacks jersey. Here's what I don't get. I don't think I'm all that smart. And yet I sit here, and how do you and I, in a conversation, come up with better ideas than people that get paid hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars, to market this stuff? That was atrocious. Like, and I don't understand how nobody has the courage to stand. Well, I understand why. You have the courage to stand up and say this, it should be done this way, and guess what you end up doing? You end up being podcasting in an airport, being told by your wife that you're not getting on the plane that you think you should get on. That's where you end up in life. So I know what happens when you make decisions. I just don't understand why baseball thought that was a good idea for the All-Star game. That's how you ruin things. So that's the number one thing that bothered me last night. The number two thing that bothered me is in the top of the seventh inning. Okay, that was when Gurriel had the home run. That didn't count. So number one, baseball, I don't really want a game to be decided on a bad call, but I'd rather a game gets decided on a bad call than sit there for 4 minutes, 5 minutes watching a replay over and over again. Get it right. If you can't get the review done in 30 seconds or more, then just be done with it. It's an exhibition game. Let's move on. That should expose you for the ignorance you've shown in years past for the umpires that you hire. Umpiring right now is terrible. How many calls get overturned all the time during a game? And yet everybody wants to say the umpires are good, yet you allow umpires to stay in their positions forever. If you haven't realized what's happened in baseball this year, have you noticed how many calls get overturned? What's happened is we have a ton of inexperienced umpires, a bunch of umpires all at the same time retired recently following the 2022 season. So now you have a bunch of umpires that have not had the same level of experience. If you knew what you were doing and you actually fired failing umpires like an Angel Hernandez more often, if you didn't accept the strike zone of Ted Barrett for as long as you did, if you actually decided to hold umpires accountable, have a rating system for umpires, and fire the underachieving ones, you would always be bringing up 3, 4, maybe 5 umpires a year. So then you would have a higher rotation of skilled umpires. Instead, they're shocked by this a large amount of retirement of umpires. They're not prepared with young umpires to step in. And now you get overturned calls, two of them, in an All-Star game. This is supposed to be the best umpires you've got, and you couldn't get it done. You couldn't handle it, Major League Baseball. So I'm fine. Gurriel's home run was disallowed because it truly was foul. I get it. Great. But I don't want that if it takes that long to get there. Well, anyway, he gets an infield hit. Next at bat is Perdomo, and he walks. So now you have one out and two Diamondbacks on base. This is where marketing to me should dictate, but there's no way for the players to really think about this. I wish they would have. I wanted Gurriel and Perdomo to do a double steal because, number one, there's one out. So it's worth the risk to get to third base with one out. If no one's ever told you that before, here's why. You don't want to make the third out at third base. That's stupid. The reason why that's stupid is because you can't have a sack fly with two outs anyway. So why risk getting to third with two outs when the only way that you have a true advantage is if there's a wild pitch? Sure, if you can get there easily, I'm not saying don't go, don't go. I'm just saying you never risk an out. You don't even go to third if there's an even thought you might get thrown out at third base for the third out. But with one out,
it's worth the risk, because if you get to third base with one out, now you're still eligible to be knocked in by a sac fly. That's why it's never a good idea to make the first or third out at third base. There's no reason to make the first out at third base because your run is already in scoring position, and if an out is made, you'll probably advance to third anyway with one out. So don't make the first out over there, and then you've got three opportunities for somebody to knock you in from second base. That's why you don't make the first out there. I just explained why you don't make the third out there. So the you never want to make an out. Please don't think I'm telling you, oh yeah, sure, make outs all you want on the bases. No, it's just when are you aggressive and when are you not? So with one out, it's time to be aggressive. And then if you do a double steal, what's the conversation about? The conversation is all D-backs. Look at these D-backs. These D-backs run. The broadcasters are talking about it. Baseball's talking about it. People on other teams start talking about it. And the more pressure you put on defenses, the more talk about how much you might run, it messes with the head of the other team. It's one more thing that can cause a distraction for another team. That's what you want. You want, because that can actually lead to errors. Now, a great fielder, a great catcher is going to be fired up for the opportunity, yes. But what about just an above-average pitcher? You might make him average if he's scared to death of your run game. I'm not talking about, oh, no, the pitcher's scared in the All-Star game. I'm talking about you get that much attention in an All-Star game for pulling off a double steal with teammates. That becomes a major selling point, especially if the next batter gets a base hit and now both runs score. So I was pretty frustrated about I was extremely frustrated about the jerseys. I was a little frustrated, like, oh, guys, how do you not see this? So that was a little annoying. Now, the next portion. What happened after that home run that was called back? The pitch was thrown by Jordan Romano. He's the Toronto Blue Jays closer. He left the game with back tightness, and he was hurt, supposedly in the bullpen, thought he could keep going, went out there and really pulled something during the Gurriel at-bat. The reason why this is a big deal is guess where the Diamondbacks are headed? The very first series after the All-Star break for the Diamondbacks is at Toronto. So they have a game coming up in a couple days at Toronto. They have a vicious beginning of the second half at Toronto, at Atlanta, at Cincinnati. But what's amazing about that stretch now is, and I'm not rooting for this, but I certainly don't apologize for taking advantage of it, that now Toronto has lost their closer in an exhibition game. And now you have the opportunity to go attack them without their closer. What's really going to be important in game one, trying to jump on the Blue Jays early to get into that bullpen. Because if you force them to use their bullpen a lot in game one, whatever rotationary or bullpen plans they had going into the series, knowing they weren't going to have Romano, are now completely shot. And it becomes just try to save face through the rest of the series. So the Diamondbacks' first three innings of the second half of the season, I'm not going to try to sell it on to you that that's going to determine the entire fate of the rest of the season. But I will let you know that this is a big, big moment, that if they can jump out early in the first three innings, try to get the starter out of the game in the first four innings, and then rifle through some of the bullpen arms, that could really set up the rest of the series and maybe start the season, the second half of the season 3-0 before you have to go take on a brutal Atlanta team. Because the next six games after Toronto, at Atlanta, at Cincinnati, are brutal. Just brutal. So that's why I really like the position of the Diamondbacks right now, if they can do anything about it. Okay, last thing on baseball. The Players Association, what a stupid idea. They want the pitch clock changed for the postseason. I have not changed my opinion at all on the pitch clock. I'm glad it's here. I just hate that we needed it. And what I mean by hate that we needed it is the players are the reason why we needed it. They refuse to speed up the game. If you want their opinion on this, they feel like, listen, it's a proven fact that if a pitcher takes 45 seconds between pitches, he's a little more rested for each pitch. And he's got his gas about him. He's ready, so he has better results. If a hitter takes his time before he gets it in the box, he can set himself up and he can follow through scenarios, because the amount of information about pitch sequences, what I mean by that is this pitcher, for an example, might always go slider, fastball, slider. Okay, that when he throws a slider for a strike, he comes back with a fastball and then he comes back with the slider. You know that going up there. Well, you get up there, and if you've only got 15 seconds to think about it, you forget, wait a minute, what was the last pitch? What's this pitch? Uh-oh. And you're not as focused. You're not, you don't have that same ability to guesstimate about what's coming, because that time's been robbed from you. So from a player standpoint, they feel like they can have better results with more rest. If they can have better results with more rest, then they're thinking, okay, that means I get more money from the owners. And the owners, they probably haven't thought this thing through, but what's most important to the owners is they know fans are enjoying this. So the players, once again, don't care about the quality of the game in the sense of for the fans. They look at it as, how can I make money? We don't like it. We want this tweaked. And they're demanding in the postseason, saying, listen, we've been used to this pitch clock. We've been used to the timer. We're going to have the game sped up because mentally we're sped up, but let's change the actual clock because it's the postseason. And they're going to sell it to us on, we don't want a game to be affected, to be changed, to be won or lost based on a pitch timer. And they're going to come up with a scenario that says something like, imagine it's the bottom of the ninth inning and there's a runner on third and a bases loaded and a three ball count. And all of a sudden there's a timer problem. And now with the timer problem, there's a walk-off walk because of a pitch clock. And that ends a postseason game. That's terrible, blah, blah, blah. And everybody wants to try to blame Rob Manfred for it. No, this is 100% a player problem. Players did not pick up the pace when they were asked to repeatedly for the last 5 years. Players were the ones that didn't adjust. And now, after an entire season of having a pitch clock, they're going to try to blame the commissioner or the pitch clock for anything that happens in the postseason. If a pitcher does not throw a pitch within 20 seconds, how is that the commissioner's fault? Yeah. If a batter is not alert to the pitcher with 8 seconds remaining on the pitch clock, how is that Rob Manfred's fault? How is that the team's fault? How is that anybody's fault except for one human being who knew the rule before he ever put a bat in his hand, who knew the rule before he ever put the ball in his hand? You knew the rule. You didn't focus. You broke the rule. And a game is determined by it, not because of the commissioner, because of you. That is the rule. So this is, once again, Tony Clark, who used to be a guy I liked, used to be a guy that returned texts, is a guy that almost every idea he has brought to the table has been wrong. And I'm still confused that the Players Association thinks he's good at his job. All right, coming up next, a little bit of NBA news that you need to know to get ready to the season. There's been a rule change that's very interesting. It's coming up next on Doug Franz Unplugged, presented by Whirlwind Golf Club at Wild Horse Pass.
If you got a second, I want to tell you about my heating, cooling, plumbing, and electrical company, and it's Parker & Sons. Now, I say my, I don't own a piece of it, but it's the people that I believe in more than I can even explain to you. Family-owned and operated, but it's also a little different because, in a sense, the technicians are their own operators as well. They are allowed and encouraged to hand out their own business cards. And if you feel like you've had such a good experience, you don't have to call the main number anymore and tell them, hey, I just need a plumber to come out. No, you can always have the same air conditioning specialist if you want, if you really feel a connection to the guy that you have, because they can then develop a bank of business of people that trust them. Well, the only way you're going to earn that is to be a trustworthy person in the first place. And that's the only types of people that Parker & Sons hires. Trust certified technicians that have passed a background check and a drug test before they ever step into your home. That's Parker & Sons. And that's why they're the heating, cooling, plumbing, and electrical specialist for my family. That's 602, the number 2, then REPAIR for Parker & Sons. Rosati Sports Pub in Chandler. It's on Ray and McQueen. Sounds like a sports bar. What's the difference? You walk in and they actually have games on TV with the sound on. How many times do you walk into a supposed sports bar and they've got loud music on or somebody playing live or some kind of trivia game going on and you're there to watch the game? If you're like me, a simple guy, give me my pizza, give me my wings, give me my cold beer, and make sure I can hear the Suns and D-backs, then you want Rosati Sports Pub in Chandler. All members of the Unplugged Army, welcome. Rosati Sports Pub, give me the game.
Some basketball news I thought you might find interesting. Two new NBA rules that were actually accepted by a unanimous decision. One of them is a no-brainer, and that is a second challenge is now being allowed if you're correct on the first one. So you challenge a rule, whatever it is, and you're wrong, you've lost your challenge and you've lost your timeout, okay? If you challenge a rule and you get it right the first time, then you not only get whatever the result is that's positive for you, but you also get your timeout back. Now, the second time you challenge, you had to have been right the first time. You have to have a timeout, and you lose your timeout no matter what. I think that's a little harsh. And the reason why is, the reason why I'm challenging again, in my opinion as a coach, would be because you were wrong twice. I had to challenge you once because you were wrong, and I got that one right. That allowed me to have the second challenge. Now, I have to challenge you again because in my mind, you're wrong. And now I've lost my timeout. The reason why I'm upset if I lose my timeout is because I can't draw up a play not knowing whether I have the ball or not. So if I've challenged something, and now I'm going to have to try to figure out a way to say, okay, if we win the challenge, this is what we're going to do. You do this, you do this, you do this. You, okay, we all good? Okay, now if we win the challenge, I want this. If we lose it, I want this. And now you got to go back and forth, make sure everybody's on the same page, and it leads to poor execution. Then the coach gets blamed for it, and suddenly the ruling comes back of whether or not the challenge was accepted, and now the timeout's over. So do I get more time after you tell me the result of the challenge, and then I can adjust? And if that's the case, I get more time. What about the fan? How boring is it for the fan? I just sat through a challenge. Now I've got to sit through a timeout. So this is where a bunch of suits sit around a table and think they've made a good decision. Oh, good, they've lost a timeout now. When in truth, you're going to get, you know, not as good basketball. What you do is a split second that the challenge has been decided. Boom, everybody's back out on the court. Let's go. There's no waiting. And if the players aren't ready, that's their fault, because this ended up not being a timeout. So these are the types of rules where people sit around and don't think it through. I have the same idea for rule. First of all, I love the hockey rule. If you want to talk about that, that's brilliant. You can challenge anything you want, but you got to delay a game penalty. I mean, think about that in like football or basketball. Think about playing down 5-4 because you missed a challenge. Think about playing 10 guys in football because the challenge was wrong. I mean, that's far worse than losing a timeout. Far worse. You're stuck on a penalty kill because you were wrong. So you want to challenge it? You better be right. That's how you handle it. But in my opinion, you should never lose a challenge when you're right. And football does that, and now basketball does it as well. If you're right on two challenges, it's it. You don't get a third. Well, how dumb is that? It's not my fault you were a bad official. And it's the same thing in football. I don't think football should have two challenges. I think you should only get one. But you get one every single time you're right. Anytime you challenge it and you're right, you get another challenge. In football, if you get two correct challenges, you get a third. But if your third challenge is used and it's correct, it doesn't matter. You don't get a fourth. Why not? How is it your fault that the referee was wrong three times? Why should I run out of challenges? So that's one rule in the NBA. A second one, this is weird. There's now going to be an in-action flopping rule. So it doesn't stop play. So in college basketball, they make a symbol when the referee takes both palms up, extends his arms, and goes up and down. And when he does that, that's showing that was a flop. And the next time there's a timeout, we'll give you a warning. And then the next time there's a one-shot technical. Well, in the NBA, I don't know what the signal is going to be from the referee that shows this. It might be the exact same thing, that there's a flop call that's been made. However, it doesn't stop play. So the next time the ball has been knocked out of bounds, there's a foul, whatever the next stoppage in play is, you'll go back to that flop. And then that team is assessed a non-unsportsmanlike technical. I didn't know there was a phrase, non-un, but non-unsportsmanlike tech gets assigned to the team. So the player that flopped gets fined by the league, but doesn't get a personal foul. The team does not get a team foul, and the player does not get an unsportsmanlike technical. The reason why that's important is if you get two unsportsmanlike technical fouls, then you're ejected from the game. So technically, you could have as many flopping technical fouls, and it doesn't affect whether or not you get to keep playing in any way. Those fouls are assessed to the team, but it's not a team foul. Now, one other aspect of the flop rule, it's non-challengeable. So if a referee calls Devin Booker for a flop, that stands, and there's nothing that Frank Vogel can do about it. What is weird, though, about this is if there's already been a challenge to something and referees are reviewing a play, they can assess a flop then and there. So imagine a play where you get fouled and you think you get fouled and you react to it. And the referee calls the foul on the other guy. You're happy. You're getting ready to go to the free throw line. Then the opposing coach challenges it. They review it and they discover, number one, you didn't get fouled. Number two, you flopped. So you lose the right to go to the free throw line. The other team, if it's their first challenge, gets their timeout back. The other team gets a one-shot technical, and you get fined. So you had a chance at 2 points, and you turn around and lose money. All of that can happen because of the other guy challenging when you reacted to getting fouled, and you went over the top, and the reaction really didn't get fouled. So those are the two new NBA rules you need to know about. As far as the WNBA, Merck lost last night, 98-72. They remain the worst team in all of the WNBA. It's amazing that you supposedly have two of the greatest players of all time, and you stink. Diana Taurasi, 3 of 11 from the field, 1 of 6 from 3. Brittany Griner only could muster 6 rebounds despite being the tallest person on the floor. And listen to this stat. The Mercury, 15 assists, 9 turnovers. Not great, but not bad. Vegas, 24 assists and only 3 turnovers. I have never heard of an assist-to-turnover ratio of 8-1 before in my life. 8-1. It is impossible to play defense that bad to give up an 8-1 assist-to-turnover ratio. I mean, what an utter embarrassment the Phoenix Mercury are. I mean, that is such a joke of a franchise to not only be in last place, not only be on your second head coach, not only give up an 24-3 assist to turnover ratio, but then you add to it, you've got two players that are promoted as the greatest of all time, and this is the effort that is shown. Oh my goodness. Even though she's already fired, I just laugh at the Mercury's decision to fire their head coach before Vanessa Nygaard, Bordello, and then go with Vanessa Nygaard. What an embarrassing decision to think, oh, hey, we made the finals, but we lost, so that's not good enough because we're this proud franchise, so we're going to fire people that take us to the finals, and we're going to hire Vanessa Nygaard, and that's going to change everything. Wow. I mean, that whole front office should have been blown up a long time ago. All right, coming up next, got a little bit of a football story for you that makes me laugh. Thanks for listening to Doug Franz Unplugged, presented by Whirlwind Golf Club at Wild Horse Pass.
It's big, it's juicy, it's meaty. Get your burrito at Burrito Express. If you're having a hangover, a bad day, even a good day, still get your burrito at Burrito Express. It will make you feel better.
Burrito Express started with my father about 25 years ago. He got laid off and decided that he needed to do something to provide for his family. My brother and I were older teens, 17, 18 year old, and I'm going to do a trial out of my house. So literally we decided we're going to start out of his house. So we delivered menus in a square mile area, literally started delivering burritos out of our home in Mesa, Arizona. And after about a month, he said, let's do this. Went and found his first location. And believe it or not, that's how it started. We started with one location back in 1995. Now we're where we are now.
So, two quick football things. Going to be a lot of football coming up on Beer Friday, just to let you know. Both Rattlers with head coach Kevin Guy and some excerpts from my conversation with Ron Church that I'll be recording later on today, and a lot of Cardinals. And I want to get into the Cardinals a little bit right now. So the Cardinals in-house media, meaning paid people to say nice things about the Cardinals, and those people did an interview with Kyler Murray, and Kyler Murray talked about that last year was necessary. They had to go through the pain of last year to just kind of clean things up, and he mentioned how much negativity went into the season last year, and that just seemed to snowball throughout the season. And now they just don't have time for the negativity, and they'll have it all fixed this year. I hope you don't mind me saying this, because it sounds so arrogant, and I hope you and I have had enough beers as a member of the Unplugged Army that you understand. I've always joked, I'm not arrogant or modest. I'm just honest. If I'm better than you at something, I'll tell you. and if I'm not very good at something, I'll say, listen, that I stink at that. I'm not good. I'll just admit it. And I think it's an easier way to go through life when you're just honest with yourself. I have never been so proud of any opinion I've ever had than the opinion I gave in February of 2022 to trade Kyler Murray immediately, especially when Washington didn't have a quarterback and a couple teams were paying out the wazoo for quarterbacks. The price tag for any quarterback was huge. And as soon as Kyler Murray's agent issued the Murray Manifesto, I said, get rid of this guy. This guy is so totally about himself. He is not a leader. He doesn't understand what it means to be quarterback. He's a little powder. He can't handle it. And that was my opinion then, and nothing has changed. And I even doubled down on, well, you can't trade him as much now. Nobody wants him. But it's so funny to me that this line of the season started with so much negativity and it snowballed. Kyler, where did the negativity come from? It came from you. You started with the Murray Manifesto. Then you turned, first started with you dropping all Cardinal stuff from your Instagram account. So you had this childish little fit. I just laugh at immaturity, because what's so entertaining to me is how immature people don't even know they're immature. They actually justify it to themselves. And Kyler Murray, I've had so many people say, well, that's just kids these days. No, it's not. There are plenty of people that are aged 18 to 25 that are not so immature that they're going to go, you know what? Here's how I show what I want. I'm going to not talk to you about it, but I'm going to take all references to you off of my Instagram page. That'll show everybody. Then if you have a problem with somebody, why aren't you man enough to walk up to them and say, hey, I got a problem with my contract. I got a problem with this situation. You know, I'm going to take it upon myself. Since my problem is with you, I'm going to make a decision. Is the problem between you and I, is my relationship with you important enough to me to get it fixed? If my relationship with you is important enough to me, I'm going to be the one that steps forward first. I'm going to be the one that makes contact. I'm going to be the one that says, hey, I'm going to get off of my chair, come to you, talk to you, because this relationship I feel is important enough that we need to get this solved. So here's Kyler Murray. Instead of saying, you know what, this relationship is fractured, I don't feel wanted, I feel underpaid, I want a contract extension. Instead of just simply picking up the phone, sending a text, hey, I'm upset about my contract, or hey, I want to talk contract. I want this done pretty quickly. I want it done quietly. When can we get going? Instead of handling it that way, he decides, I'll show you. I'm going to take everything off of my Instagram account. Then he turns around and has the Murray Manifesto. And then he tries to act like at a charitable function. Well, no, I don't know what's going on there. That's not me. You know, listen, I just want to play ball. You're the one that did it. So you can't say you're all about football when you're all about creating these other distractions to make sure the attention is on your contract. Then he misses OTA practices going into the 2022 season. You're the quarterback. When a quarterback misses time, they usually don't win. Yeah. The only one that's ever been able to, you know what, now that I think about it, no one's ever done it. Because the year that even Tom Brady started missing practices with Tampa Bay, but it was the year after they had won the Super Bowl. See what I mean? Leadership demands a quarterback attend those. because that's when you get to know the players, your teammates the most. And that's when a quarterback learns how guys tick. And that's when a quarterback can learn, this is what I want to see you do. And this is where you show the rest of your teammates that you care about leadership. Don't suddenly walk into the room and think, I'm the quarterback, I'm the leader, when you haven't done anything to prove that you're a leader. And when you miss OTAs, that's what Kyler Murray did in 2022. Then he now tells us that was all necessary because the season started with negativity. So Mr. Negative is blaming negativity for what happened on the season. Yes, last year needed to happen because you had a general manager that had problems off the field and wasn't focused on his job. You had a head coach that was in over his head from the beginning and wanted to always claim, well, since he was 7-0 at one time in his life, that meant he could do something. Even though every single year of his head coaching career, he had a massive flame out through the second half of the season to an embarrassing proportion. But because of one 7-0 streak, that suddenly means he can coach. Even though he never figured out game management at all, and management led him last that long. Keep in mind, I said fire him after year two and they didn't listen. Now we have all of the allegations from Terry McDonough, and who knows where that's going to go, and we're still waiting for more information on that. So you have all of these things circulating around the team, and yet Kyler says last year was the year with negativity and now it's all going to be different. Listen, I love the decision to hire Jonathan Gannon. I really want to see him be successful. But if they can't get Michael Bidwill to change and they can't find a real quarterback, there's winning's not happening. Speaking of Cardinals, this is kind of a funny story to end it. The Buffalo Bills, they didn't let this out as a press release, but they've allowed a reporter to report on it that they really want DeAndre Hopkins. But they right now, nothing's moving. And they said they want him, quote, at their price. Now, the Bills don't really say that publicly, but that's been reported. What's funny about that is it shows that the Buffalo Bills are the best team there for D-Hop services, and D-Hop knows it. And then I'm guessing, that the Patriots and Dolphins are willing to offer more. So therefore, you're DeAndre Hopkins, and you're thinking, I could be the difference on a Super Bowl potential team in Buffalo, or I could go to New England and Miami and push them maybe to the playoffs or a better situation. But in no way is adding DeAndre Hopkins to Miami or to New England or to any team in the AFC going to pass that team above the Bills, Bengals, and Chiefs. I mean, think about that. D-Hop, who practices once a week if you're lucky. D-Hop, who stays healthy for about 3 games a month. D-Hop, who has become the most overrated receiver in football, actually thinks him dropping on a team is going to make them better than the Chiefs, the Bengals, or the Bills? No way. So you have to join one of those teams. And the team that's interested is the Bills. But the Bills are only interested at their price. And D-Hop's going to sit and wait. So what is he doing? Does he care about winning? He's missing all the OT. He missed all the OTA time. He missed all the mini camp time that he could have signed. Now, every player has a right to make all the money they want. Every player. So if DeAndre Hopkins is just going after the highest bidder, okay. I'm not faulting him for that. But don't turn around and claim that you're a winner, too. You have the right to decide money is more important than winning. I would tell you the truth. I've always appreciated, there are some athletes, not very many, but there are some athletes that have said they signed for the money. I'm okay with that. I'm totally okay with that. I don't fault you at all, but I laugh when you try to pretend you're about winning, and then what's best for the team is not what's best for you. The best thing for DeAndre Hopkins, if he cared about winning, was to have already signed with the Bills, already be at practice, and already learning how to develop chemistry with Josh Allen. Instead, he says he's about winning, and that's what's most important to him. And here are the criteria for the teams that he's looking for, and yet he's not willing to actually sign when he finds it, because it is about the money, and that's who DeAndre Hopkins is. That's it for today's version of Doug Franz Unplugged, presented by Whirlwind Golf Club at Wild Horse Pass. Thanks for handling my vacation shows when I really don't put any production into it. It's a little easier on me, but I realize it doesn't sound as good, and that's what separates, I hope, Doug Franz Unplugged from all other sports podcasts, is the time I put into producing it, the four-minute offense, the different things you hear, the stories, the sounds, that I go and collect, things like that. I hope that you appreciate when I do that and then understand when I'm kind of putting more time into family. The rest of this week will be vacation shows as well, but they'll be a little bit more consistent than they were on the previous parts of vacation. And then hardcore shows coming back on Monday. But Friday, boy, Beer Friday will be a packed football show. So hopefully you'll enjoy that. Thanks to Sweet Lou and everybody at Whirlwind Golf Club at Wild Horse Pass, Mikey at Bell's Nashville Kitchen in Scottsdale on Main Street, just off of Scottsdale Road, just a hair east of Scottsdale Road, and Rosati's, the official sports bar of Doug Franz Unplugged, which is at Ray and McQueen, and only the location at Ray and McQueen. Burrito Express, locations all across the east side. Keep going there so we can talk Angel and Mark into putting one on the west side. Let's go. Goodyear's dying for a Burrito Express. And it is miserably hot right now. I get it. You've got to use Parker and Sons. They're the only ones that you can count on time and time again in this heat to treat you right. Think about how easy it is to be taken advantage of with an air conditioning unit in this heat, because you desperately need service. It's easy for you to lower your standards and just try to go with anybody. You'll be blown away that Parker and Sons is not only the fastest, but they're also the most accurate, reliable, and honest. 602-2-REPAIR is the phone number for Parker and Sons Heating, Cooling, Plumbing, and Electrical. And I'll see you tomorrow.